Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Just a few weeks ago, we had Kelsey Conway and Jason Hoffman on to talk about behind the scenes of the Bengals, but there's so much more to talk about. So we're going to do it again, and we are going to have Kelsey on, and we're going to, surprise, have Jason Williams come back and hang out with us on That's So Cincinnati. So I think we're in for, you know, for a really good conversation this afternoon. We'll get back to our, you know, regularly scheduled special guests next week. But I like pulling the curtain back. Hi, Burl.
I do too. And they are special guests. Who else would we want to talk to after the crazy week that was the Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC Championship game?
I do have kind of like a little list here. The hardest thing, you guys, honestly, about planning the podcast, because it's easy if it's planned out, as everything is in life. But we do like to be, we like it to special, we say special guest here, but in my head, it really is newsmaker. Who's the newsmaker of the weeks? And so it's a balance of planning things out and not putting the onerous on our guests last second, as Jason and I like to do, but being in the moment.
Well, we're definitely in the moment. And I guess the moment we should talk about, just to get it out of the way, wrap it up and move forward, but it just has to be discussed. If this is a That's So Cincinnati, if the podcast lives up to its name, That's So Cincinnati. We had a textbook of example of what a mayor shouldn't do on social media leading up to a big NFL championship game. And of course, I'm talking about the now infamous Aftab Perval trash talk video. You actually, Sherry, interviewed him after, you know, when the dust finally settled with all of this. And I probably don't need to describe it to listeners, but just to give it a little bit of context. He took to Twitter and tweeted a video where he read a proclamation calling it "They Have to Play Us Week," where he also disparaged Patrick Mahomes in a less than statesman-like way, among other things. And immediately the blowback was significant, not just from Kansas City fans, but from Cincinnati fans who, you know, described it. My favorite description of it was, "This is cringeworthy." So you talked to him.
I did. It was almost the definition of cringe. I can hear a little bit of, in my voice. I have been very sick this past week. And when it was all unfolding, I was laying on my couch. And so things got a little bit out of hand on Friday. I was actually literally, I get alerts every time Aftab tweets or like posts on social media. That's just how it goes, right? He's the mayor. You never know what he's going to say, right? Might be newsy. So I was kind of like watching. And any other week, I might have gone to the flag raising. Like, it's exciting, the Bengals and everything. And, like, you can't just go to City Hall for the bad moments. So it's sometimes good to go for the fun moments. And, but I was kind of watching it. And you could just see the trash talking kind of started there. And people were kind of overexcited. And I think a little bit of the whole city was like that on social media. And so he used the term when I talked to him about how everything came down. I got over my skis, which really is kind of a phrase of like, it got out of hand.
Right. And I think what really, you know, there were two peaks of this story. One was when he first tweeted and the reaction, and then when the Chiefs won, and Travis Kelce, who, you know, played football at the University of Cincinnati, had a great game against the Bengals in the AFC Championship loss, made his now famous, you know, during the trophy presentation, called out the mayor specifically, referred to him as a jabroni. And so that was hilarious, because as we watched trending news and search terms, jabroni spiked as far as the term people were searching for. And it was one of those either you know or you don't. If you were a professional wrestling fan in the 90s, you're familiar with the word. And if not, you're like, what does this even mean? But I think that was the moment where prior to that, it's just the mayor tweeting. Did he embarrass himself or not? That's up for debate. But when, at the end of a nationally televised AFC Championship game, he gets caught out like that. I think it's not a stretch to say that any of us who live in Cincinnati and take pride felt that embarrassment. Like, you know, he represents us for better or for worse in, you know, on the national stage like that. I think we could have done without that attention.
Well, but, you know, definitely. I think it was doubly stunning because he never makes a misstep, never. And so, especially on social media. And so to see that happen from him especially was really like a double shock. But we, you know, Dan Horn wrote a story about like the psychology of trash talking. It's a real thing. And we heard, you know, later in interviews, Kansas City players, some we wrote about, some we didn't because we don't cover every, you know, move they make. They said that it did matter to them and it did fire them up. And Aftab said to me in our interview, he's like, I didn't know that the Kansas City, he's like, I know that it went viral and everything in our city and got some national attention. But he's like, I didn't know until that moment that it was like they saw it, the players saw it. And he felt bad about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it did go national. A lot of sports sites picked it up prior to Travis Kelce's remarks at the end of the game. To Aftab's credit, I think he couldn't have handled the post, the aftermath any better. He tweeted out right away, you know.
My bad.
My bad. He hasn't tried to defend it other than to say, you know, the fact that he's a big Bengals fan and that he was excited about the game, he kind of let that get out of control a little bit. He said he learned from it, said he regretted that it became a distraction. So he's said all the right things. He's done all the right things afterward. I think it was very stand up of him to speak to you in an interview and talk to it after the fact. Other politicians in that situation, I think, would just try to hide from it or continue to spin it or, you know, put together a hastily called press conference to announce some positive news to try to take away from it. But no, he owned it for better or for worse. And I think I think that was the right thing to do. And not something that I think comes natural for a lot of politicians who are always worried about image and everything like that. I think he saw the wisdom of taking his lumps, not taking himself too seriously that he can't own that. And I think that for me, that was good enough, you know, like speaking just as, you know, any Bengals fan or anybody who takes pride in the city and wants us to shine in the national spotlight. I'm good with that. I don't know how others feel, but I'm good. How about you?
Absolutely. I give him a lot of credit. You know, we had some off the record conversations leading up to whether we were going to do this or not. And so he didn't say no or yes quickly. He put thought into like how that was going to go. But then once he made, like, he had been really not doing it. I mean, my boss Carl went to lunch and I was like, no, we're not doing this. And I'm going to do this, that, and the other. And then during lunch, he came back. I'm like, I'm at City Hall. So it came together like super quickly. So I did feel that Aftab was candid in his conversation. Like, he hadn't been like, these are all the things I'm going to say in the 3 days since it happened and everything. So I thought we had a very candid conversation, which I appreciated. The only thing that I wish we knew more about was he did talk to Katie Blackburn, but he declined to really offer a lot of details about that. And like, I guess we'll have to wait for the Aftab Puroval memoirs, his journals, to come out later.
I don't even know if that'll make his memoir if Katie called him. And of course, we're talking about Katie Blackburn, who essentially runs the team for the Brown family. And yes, I can just imagine her sitting, you know, in her office or her home office. I'm sure she has an assistant or somebody like that. And she just simply turned around and said, get Aftab on the phone now.
So, yeah, I don't want.
And he was probably very deferential. Hello, Mrs. Blackburn.
Carl, I will say, like, one of the editor questions in the story last night, Carl's like, did you reach out to Katie to ask her what she said? I'm like, you know, to be honest, I didn't. Usually we do things like that. I was like, but that's not happening. Like, yes. I could do that. I could bother everybody late at night now at this point where we're at. I was like, but I feel very confident she's not getting on the phone and telling me what happened.
Well, and normally as an editor, I'm the guy pushing, saying, look, we know that's the case. 99% chance that they are definitely not going to comment. But if we don't pick up the phone and ask, then there's 100% chance.
Oh, that's true. Kelsey said she's going to check for me today.
That they're not going to comment.
Speaking of Kelsey, are we ready to move into special guest segment?
I think that's the perfect segue. Let's do that.
Welcome to special guest time on That's So Cincinnati. And by special guest, I mean special. Welcome back, Jason Williams. And Kelsey and I have gotten to be really good friends, so I'm super excited about this conversation. They're fresh off Kansas City.
Hey, hey, Sherry and Burl. Great to be on this podcast. You know, I was just on Cincinnati.com this morning, and I saw your guys is a promo photo, and it looks great. And it's great to see TSC still kicking butt. So I enjoy listening.
Well, as everybody knows, at least everybody who has listened to the podcast, Jason was one of the founding podcasters of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And Sherry and I have been just literally trying to fill his shoes ever since he left.
So I don't know about that. You guys are doing great.
glad to have you back. And Kelsey's no stranger. She's been on the podcast several times, including when we interviewed the Blackburn sisters. And so I'm just really like what I thought we would do today. You guys talk enough about, you know, the X's and O's. This is really, I think, will be a fun opportunity to debrief you for our listeners, for the people who read and follow you. It was a long season. We like long seasons because that means we get to cover a playoff run, but just really, interested in, like I said, kind of debriefing you, talk about what it was like from your perspective covering this season. And I guess my first question would be, you know, I would say, Kelsey, you of all people have remained the most objective about the Bengals. And so I'm guessing you really weren't too surprised that they weren't able to beat Kansas City for the fourth time in a row.
Yeah, I didn't pick them to win against the Chiefs. And it was nothing about that I didn't think the Bengals were good enough. I just know in sports, you know, people talk about it all the time when it's March Madness time and basketball teams have to face each other three times in a row. It is so hard to beat a team four times in a row, especially given the last three matchups against the Chiefs were all decided by 3 points, and not taking anything away from the Bengals' three wins. But it just kind of felt like if it was a one play difference of the Bengals winning those games. And I just had this feeling that going into Arrowhead again, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, the Chiefs head coach, were going to have things that the Bengals weren't going to be able to deal with. So I did pick them to lose. I know people probably don't like to hear that, but it is my job to be objective. So yes, I was not surprised that they lost.
Do you get blowback from your readers when you say things like that? And they always expect you to be like, of course they're going to win?
No, because I think readers and fans appreciate the fact that I have no ties to the Bengals. I have no ties in terms of like fanship to anything other than like the UC Bearcats. So I think people appreciate a beat reporter not being objective and not being a fan. I think they like the fact that I just am, I try to just keep all my thoughts and you know, whenever I make analysis or anything, and Jason Williams and I talk about it all the time when we're like talking post game, all right, here's what I'm going to do for analysis, here's what he's going to do for a column. It's always fact-based. And I feel like that keeps me out of trouble with people in terms of not getting a lot of blowback or people, you know, like really like getting upset with me, because I really just try to keep every thought that I have connected to a stat or a reason why I believe that. And that's helped me.
So Jason, I remember when Sherry went on one of her many, you know, lavish vacations, and you had to substitute for her. I think you maybe in Waikiki or something like that, Sherry, on that particular trip. But you were on the podcast, Jason, and I asked you to, I think this was after week three, maybe, and I asked you to, if there was a path to 10 wins for this season, and you barely were able to get 9 wins in your mind at the time. So obviously they, you know, they came on strong at the end of the season, but you're also known for your objectivity, for, you know, being, you know, willing to be critical in a town that really is full of people that expect us to be homers. What's it been like for you, especially since, you know, this is your first full year as our sports columnist?
This is a fantastic question. And, you know, it's been interesting because, you know, his first 6 months back in sports and as a sports columnist and going right into the you know, the Bengals. And I wrote in my column last week ahead of the Chiefs game my prediction. I didn't make it just a sort of a few paragraph prediction. I wrote a full column and sort of I really explained my evolution of how I viewed the Bengals. And I somewhere along the line the last few weeks, it really hit me why people still were doubting this team. And again, this is my own perspective because I felt like I was one of those people. And it was that you're looking at the Bengals from the 50,000 foot view of their history over 32 years and not just the last 2 years. And honestly, I caught myself and thought, you know what, that's not fair. You know, people, organizations, people, individuals can change. And certainly, the Bengals have changed. And even though it's the same people running the organization, they're doing things right. And so I was just raw and honest with the audience. And I said, hey, like I was really viewing the Bengals from, you know, the team that was really mediocre for 30 years and couldn't win a playoff game for 30 years. And, you know, had all this off the field drama for so long. And I said, it's challenging. And I think I know what some of those national pundits are thinking is that that's what they're thinking. They're like, wait, now, wait a minute. Mike Brown's still the owner and still same player personnel people. And it's like, are these guys really for real? Or is this like a 1 year, 2 year kind of thing here? And, you know, I think the reality is that, you know, Joe Burrow, it all goes back to number 9, and he's changed the entire culture of that organization. It's pretty amazing. And I felt like I owed it to the audience to say, this is how I was viewing the Bengals, and that I need to be viewing them more so in a more fair way is to say it, but I needed to give more credit to the Joe Burrow era of the Bengals than I was, if that makes any sense.
It does. It's like you had to give a confession of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. No, I get
it. And honestly, Burrow, like I've long had a great respect for Katie Blackburn, even going back to my days, like when I was at the Cincinnati Post. I remember, you know, I would go down to Georgetown. They would send me to do sidebars, and Georgetown was a training camp in Kentucky for the Bengals. And I always enjoyed talking to Katie, and just in tremendous respect for her, as being really ahead of things as a woman executive and what's, you know, and a good old boys network and just how she negotiates contracts. And so incredibly, you know, a lot of respect for her. And to me, the fact that, you know, they've persevered and they've stayed the course and, you know, her daughter's come in. You guys had a great podcast episode with the Blackburn sisters. And so, you know, all that stuff is factored into just the changing of this organization. I think number nine is just kind of really sort of tied it all together and taking it into a whole new positive direction.
That's one of the things I noticed listening to commentators and others. I don't know if the world is ready to take the Bengals seriously yet, but they do take number nine seriously. And
yeah,
and have talked about how exciting it's going to be in the years ahead to have this Mahomes Burrow sort of narrative going. I'm going to date myself, but it kind of reminds me of the Bradshaw Tarkington, you know, kind of perennial end of season matchup type thing. And I think that's exciting for us. I want to also, before I forget to ask the question, I'm curious to ask both of you, we'll start with Kelsey. You probably had an idea in your head of how the season was going to go. But what was the biggest surprise or unexpected story of this season from your point of view?
Kind of just playing off of what Jason was saying. I think the biggest surprise for me was that I too was often waiting for the other shoe to drop with the Bengals. I too was like, I had a hard time getting to 10 wins also, just because you did have to wonder, was last year a fluke? And I would say about the Titans game back in Thanksgiving weekend when they went and won, I was like, they're actually a really good team. Like, credit to them. That wasn't a fluke last year. It's not a fluke this year. They're a really good team. So I think for me, that was probably the biggest surprise, was that it took me a little bit to get there, but they went through a lot of adversity. I mean, as someone who's covered this team every single day since training camp started back in late July, like, I mean, let's go back to Joe Burrow having his surprise appendectomy right before training camp. Burrow, you were talking about, like, what are some stories people don't know about behind the scenes? I was running on the treadmill at Orange Theory, because it was before training camp had started. So it was like a 12 o'clock workout for me. And I always bring my phone in just in case emergencies happen. And I see my phone just like light up, and I'm walking at this point because it was a break in the workout. And Ian Rappaport of NFL Network had tweeted Joe Burrow had surgery this morning on his appendix. And I was like, what? And I just sprinted off the treadmill and I ran home, and I was texting people on my way home to try and get information. Then I jumped on.
While driving? Quick,
what? No, well, I don't stopped hear lights. This, don't worry.
No, I'm kidding.
but it was just like, thank God the gym is so close to my house. And I rushed home, and then I wrote a story, and then it was like, okay, he didn't practice. And then there was the training camp fight. Remember when Aaron Donald and the helmets were swinging with the Rams? And then they started 0-2 and they couldn't protect Joe Burrow. And it was like, oh, here we go again. Jason and I would sit next to each other in the press box. Like, they couldn't get this right. Really? They had, you know, all this money spent. And so then it was like, what to make of the Bengals? And then they started winning, but their division record was so bad. They hadn't won a division game. And then they went into Halloween and just looked horrendous against the Browns on Halloween. And it was just like, what are these Bengals? And then they lost Jamar Chase for four games. And then it was the question, can they win without Jamar Chase? They proved that they could. And then they went on that run, and it just, I guess the theme for me, and I asked Zach Taylor about it, was like, this team constantly found answers to every question that anyone had about them. And I think that's what surprised me the most, is they didn't allow any of all the adversity they went through. They didn't allow it to derail their season. And I think that shows how talented their team is and how good of a coaching staff they have. So I think that's probably the biggest takeaway for me, because I certainly had doubts. Jason had doubts. A lot of people had doubts. When a team was so bad for so long and then makes the type of run they did last year, it leaves you wondering, was it just a fluke? But they had answers to every test. It seemed like every month they were dealing with something that would derail their season, and they didn't let it happen.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That was the first thought when you asked that question, Burrow. That was my first thought, too, just the amount of adversity they had to overcome, the amount of things that they didn't face last year but had to face this year. And then on top of all that adversity, they were facing all that with the target on their back of, you know, higher expectations and are these guys a fluke or not? And so they had to, you know, the pressure of to win was there this year, whereas it wasn't last year. And as Kelsey's talking there, it makes me just think about all of this and how impressive of a season this was. And I hope people will see, I don't hope they do. I mean, they'll see it for whatever they want to see it, but this was a better team this year than last year's team. And I know this team didn't make the Super Bowl, but this was a better team. Right? And to win 10 games in the NFL, 10 straight is almost like unheard of. And for them to do that, to go on a franchise record 10 game winning streak in a league that is set up to where we don't want 10 game winning streak teams.
Right.
That's a huge point. Kelsey was talking about, you know, the odds of beating one team like the Chiefs four times in a row. When we were watching the game, my wife was like all excited and jumping up and down, and I'm sitting there like nervous, and she's like, "What's wrong with you?" And I'm just like, "I'm really nervous. I just have a bad feeling about this." And she's like, "Why? Why do you be such a Debbie Downer?" And I was like, "Do you know what? If they end up winning the Super Bowl, they will have had to win 12 games in a row."
Right.
12. Think about that. And I don't know if that would have been like a modern era record. I think a Dolphins team went undefeated recently. I can't remember now, in the regular season. Am I right about that?
It was not recently, though.
Right? Well, recently for me, I mean, I'm like, you know, I have many years under my belt, so it might seem
the Dolphins more... in 1972.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That was a long time ago.
Went 17-0.
But didn't New England go undefeated in the regular season?
Yeah. So that's, I mean, those odds, you know, it's just like, you know, death and taxes are the only sure things in life. I think you can add to that, you know, if you, in the NFL, you're not going to go on a 12 game run. It's just it's that would have been an incredible feat there. So I'm with you on that, Jason. That's
100%.
And I mean, like, think about the Rams, the team that the Bengals were facing in the Super Bowl last year that won the Super Bowl. They didn't even make the playoffs. That's why it's like the NFL is the best reality TV show you can watch, because they make it so hard on teams to get back for the reason of people. Think about it. Like, how many more people know about the Bengals because they were in the Super Bowl last year? It's like made for people to become even more obsessed and want to watch the NFL.
So do we want to now discuss, we talked about this earlier, but I mean, we have to ask you, how big of a factor was the trash talk, particularly that of what the mayor contributed to the let's call it a distraction, pregame distraction, maybe? Was that even, you know, from your perspective, was that even a factor, or is that just all of us, you know, in crazy fan zone, but like, you know, in the stadium, in the locker room, in the press box? Was that even a factor? Was that even something you were thinking about?
I would say, I don't think it was a factor for the Bengals players. I think it was a factor for the Chiefs players, but I don't think the Bengals players were like, "I really wish the mayor didn't say that." I don't think they really think like that. Like, Joe Burrow was asked about it after the game, and he said, "Trash talk is part of what makes the NFL fun." So, and Eli Apple, the starting cornerback, is known for his notorious trash talking. I mean, tweeting at the Bills, Cancun on three after he beat them, you know, trying to play and off Pat
Beverly. Can we
Beverly.
Just say that of all the people who shouldn't be trash talking, I would put Eli Apple on that list. Come on, man.
I know. That's just what he does, though. He sets himself up for it, and he holds nothing back. But I think that the Bengals players I mean, because Mike Hilton was the one that said Burrowhead, so he started that. But I think it was more so just fuel for the Chiefs. And, like, anytime you give Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes more fuel, I mean, who wants to do that?
I certainly didn't think that I would this week be like, oh, Travis Kelce, know how to spell his name, know everything about him, but here we are.
Yeah, I think in terms of the game itself, you know, not a lot. You know, I was thinking a lot about this last few days. You know, you can go through a lot of plays in that game, the Bengals, especially right there at the end, too. I mean, that they had a really bad punt to give the ball back to the Chiefs. Like, did Aftab's comments force a bad punt there? Did Aftab's comments, you know, force Joseph Osai to, you know, not let up on the play soon enough? And I don't want to put it all on him, and I don't think anyone should. But you go through all that game, and you're like, at the end of the day, like, it came down to once again, a Bengals-Chiefs game came down to, you know, a field goal, and is a close game and decided by a field goal ultimately. And so I don't even know if it affected these guys are just, they're just wired differently. And so I think if that would have been said by, you know, someone in the Bengals organization or on the Bengals team, then, you know, maybe. But I think just the biggest takeaway for me is that how much a couple things from the Cincinnati perspective is that, you know, greater Cincinnatians really worry about what the rest of the world thinks of them. And there's, you know, I think some people would call it an inferiority complex. And I've talked to some friends about this, people who like Aftab, and they're really upset with him because they think it made Cincinnati look bad on the national, you know, on the national stage. And, to me, like, it's more of a fan thing. It's more of a Cincinnati resident, citizen type of thing. But when it came down to the actual impact on the game itself, I mean, I don't think so, but, you know, I thought Dan Horn had a great story talking about a study that says these kinds of things do can impact the outcomes of games. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't argue with that. And, you know, I wouldn't argue with Kelce either on, you know, that it impacted the Chiefs, or at least, you know, some certain individuals might've been extra motivated by it.
I will say, though, while we're on, like, the subject of this, I think for the listeners who don't really know my story, is that last year was my first season covering the Bengals. And I think what's cool for the Inquirer, and we were talking about earlier about, like, objectivity, is that I don't have the thoughts about the Bengals in previous years that Jason does. So that's why I feel like we're a good dynamic, because he'll call me and ask me questions about the Bengals, and I'll sometimes be like, no, I don't think that's it anymore. And he's drawing from a bank of following this team for 30 years and living here. I get the luxury of coming here on a clean slate. And I mean, shoot, my first 2 years, the Bengals went to the AFC Championship game, so they can do no wrong in my eyes. Of course, I've been following the game, so I know the narrative around the Bengals and all that stuff. But I think that's what makes us unique, is that I don't have that, you know, kind of like stain on me from years past of being a Bengals fan. And I will say, one of the things that has been the most impressive thing I've noticed about covering this team for 2 years is when I went to the University of Cincinnati, it was during the Andy Dalton days, and the Paul Brown Stadium would be like halfway filled. I would go to the games when they would play the Ravens, because I grew up a Ravens fan. Stadium would be half full. And I remember even the first game that I covered, it was that regular season game against the Vikings last year, that was a crazy overtime ending. And the stadium was not that full. Watching the fans in the city immerse themselves in this team in the way that they have, I had no idea the Bengals had a fan base like this. It has truly been one of the most impressive, mind-blowing things I've noticed. And as someone who travels to every game, I mean, every single away game, there are hundreds of Bengals fans on the Delta or American Airlines that I'm going on. So I did just want to point that out because I think the fans in the city deserve a lot of credit for that because they're truly creating like a Green Bay Packers, Buffalo Bills vibe for their team where like the Bengals are the thing now and it's the hot ticket. Yeah. And it's just been really cool as someone who didn't know this about Cincinnati that watching the fan base just completely immerse themselves into now. I remember the Tampa game, Sherry, you were there. Like there was a ton of Bengals fans and you can hear them cheering. And now the Bengals are creating a fan base that travels like the Bills, the Steelers, people know about those fan bases. People are going to start knowing about the Bengals fan base. And I say that with just absolute, like I had no idea what to expect and they've completely shocked me in that.
That is its own cast of characters, its own soap opera. Like there's, like standout characters in the fandom. It really, last year, I think, emerged as its own subset of watching what's happening.
Mm-hmm. I remember we talked about this on the podcast before when Kelsey was on, but when we offered you the job, I remember plain as day, like it was yesterday, I was almost apologetic in offering you the job to cover the Bengals because they were coming off a 4-win season. You know, the fan base hadn't been energized yet. And I said, well, you know, things are looking up. They just drafted Joe Burrow, you know, Heisman Trophy winner, college champion, you know, I'm thinking, you know, in a few seasons, they might actually, you know, get to the playoffs again. Hang in there, you know, don't be discouraged. I was giving you that kind of a pep talk and then boom, they go to the Super Bowl and you're like, wow, this is the best job ever. And I'm like, I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
By a mile.
Speaking of the fans too, and I think this goes back to Aftab's comments. I think another piece of that is that this fan base, and I'm glad you brought that up, Kelsey, is this fan base is hungry to not be viewed in the prism of that 30 years leading up to last season. And so I think part of that is they saw Aftab's comments as bringing on that drama that they were so used to seeing happen with their team all those years of mediocre football and all the drama. And even though that drama came from within, the drama just kind of, you know, it took a bad, you know, just sort of snowballed. And so I think part of why people were so upset with Aftab's comments was playing into it. It's like, no, that's not who we are anymore. We're not the team that talks all this junk and like, you know, that's not Joe Burrow and that's not Zach Taylor. And we're the team that just, you know, quietly goes about our business and then goes in there with sort of that, you know, that killer instinct and wins games. But we don't do it. You know, there's a couple individuals who tweet some things or whatever, but overall, that's not the culture of the Cincinnati Bengals is to talk trash. And that's the old Cincinnati Bengals. And so I think that, you know, that was kind of the other piece of that I think the Aftab thing was playing into the fan base. You know, they want nothing to do with, you know, with those kinds of comments, not generally speaking.
Well, when a columnist at the Washington Post takes the time to write about how sadly, after becoming the darlings of the nation, the Bengals and their fans were just annoying now.
I just don't think it's the the thing is, like, I don't think it's the Bengals themselves. And again, you know, I know Eli Apple tweeted some things or whatever, but that's not the overall who the Bengals are. They're not the flashy, you know, Dallas Cowboys of the early 90s, you know, where, you know, they're not, you know, the teams that Deion Sanders was on where, you know, it's, you know, you talk all this trash and you put it all out there and then you go play the game. Like, that's just not, like, that's not Zach Taylor's personality. That's not Joe Burrow's personality. And that locker room has taken on those two guys' personalities.
Yeah, except I think the writer was pointing to, like, you know, some of the end zone celebrations that the defense was doing, the roller coaster, the snow angels and all of that, which, you know, cut them some slack. They, you know, let them have some fun. The game
that is like, I didn't know it went there, but to criticize touchdown celebrations as a team, that's just no. I think that, listen, the NFL has already put its foot down in terms of limiting what guys can and can't do celebrating. And the fact that the Bengals do harmless snow angels as a defense when they pick a quarterback off. I mean, if people have issues with that.
And I loved it because on my Facebook feed, anyone I am friends with that has little kids were posting pictures of their kids out making snow angels.
It was
relatable. Well, in the time we have remaining, I'm just curious. I wanted to kind of pry some inside perspective out of you. And maybe we'll start with maybe some Bengals, you know, superlatives. I'm like curious from a, you know, again, we can look at stats and talk about performance all day long. I'm curious to know, like, you know, who would you say, for example, is the locker room clown of that team?
Clown in which way, Burl? Like
in a positive, making everybody laugh.
Okay, because you know there could be the other type of clown where you're like, I think we all know who we would say, and we mentioned him just a couple of minutes
ago. No, not the ass clown award, but the fun clown.
The fun clown. I think I would say Mike Hilton. I don't know if you guys saw the Bengals posted a video of the mannequin challenge, and if you haven't, I'll send it to you. But he dressed up as, like, when you walk into the Bengals locker room, there's a mannequin that shows what jersey they're going to wear each weekend. And it's just like a plastic body. And as a joke, Mike Hilton dressed up as the mannequin. So he, like, put himself in the corner where the mannequin is and just, like, stood there in the uniform. And when people would walk by, he'd, like, yell and jump out. And he got Joe Burrow. And it was, like, the funniest video I've seen of the Bengals. So I would say he is just, like, very lighthearted and makes everyone laugh on the defensive side of the ball. And it doesn't seem like he's ever, you know, takes it too seriously, not in a way that he's not serious about his work. But I would say Mike Hilton is probably the bit. There's also been a lot of fans that have tweeted at me saying, like, he's become their new favorite, because that's the cool part about when the Bengals mic people up and the NFL mics people up, you get to see their personality. So I would say Mike Hilton.
Yeah, I was going to say I had one on defense and one on offense, and one was Mike Hilton on defense and then on offense. And I don't know if clowns are right, but either way, like, I think more big personalities and the types of players that kind of are, you know, the so-called glue of the clubhouse or locker room that the guys gravitate to. And, you know, they keep things lighthearted. And on the offensive side, I think it's Ted Karras. And, you know, he's a great personality, and he just seems like a guy who, you know, he just gets along with all of his players, the guy, walk of life, the guy is from, what position he is. He's the kind of guy that you can just go to and talk to, and he'll have, you know, something great to say to you. And then he'll also have, you know, something lighthearted as well to say. And, you know, he did the whole hat thing, the Cincy hat, and kind of got that going. And
raised $500,000.
I'm drawing a blank. Yeah. I'm drawing a blank on the company that makes those hats, but whatever. That was just a cool thing. And for a guy, too, that this was his first year in Cincinnati, to come in here, walk in, to become, like, really immerse himself in Bengals, in the locker room culture and the Bengals organization, and embrace Who Day and the apparel and all that, to me, just shows, like, that's a guy who's real appreciative of his opportunity and to be here. And he's a guy, and Mike Hilton as well, that really made the Bengals team just, you know, they're sort of the behind the scenes unsung type of folks who really contribute to make this a fun team to follow and cover it and watch.
Yeah, Burl, you were asking for, like, some stuff that people might not know. Every year, the media votes on a player that's called the Media Good Guy Award, and all the beat writers vote. And The winner was Ted Karras this year, and it's an award that basically just says, you know, thank you for your cooperation with the media, helping the media do their job by making yourself available and providing thoughtful answers. And the winner was Ted Karras, and the runner up was Mike Hilton. So if that helps,
that's great.
If that helps kind of show what those two guys are like in the locker room.
Did Ted Karras have your vote?
I actually voted for Mike Hilton, and this is why, because Ted Karras is a captain. So I think when you're a captain, it's kind of part of the job to be always accommodating. And it's kind of like you wear it as your badge, you know, like you're a captain, you should be well-spoken, you should be accommodating to the media. Whereas Mike Hilton, he's not a captain. And at any hour of the day, any day of the week, if you're ever like, hey, Mike, you got a second? I have a question about this. It's always, of course. So I voted for Mike Hilton.
There's always I think the other thing that's impressive about this Bengals team and the culture of the club out of the locker room is, you know, I've been in a lot of major league. I covered baseball for 3 years. And so I've been in a lot of major league clubhouses. You know, I've done Bengals. And there's no guy in there. They're almost every clubhouse you ever go into or locker room you ever go into, there's always that at least that one guy who you got to tiptoe around him. And you're like, ooh, you know, oh, is so-and-so in a good mood today? Like, ooh, yeah, I don't want to talk to him today. Like, he's not in a good mood. Or he's just overall just a certain person that is usually prickly to the media. Well, I didn't think that, like, you know, every once in a while, you know, there's – you never felt like you're tiptoeing around anyone in that locker room. Certainly, are there some guys that can be moody? Like, yeah, like it's a melting pot of people. You know, some of all the practice squad. You know, so but for the most part, like this is a locker room of really good dudes. Like you're not tiptoeing around. Is Corey Dillon going to talk to me today? I remember Corey Dillon. Like, I'm not trying to pick on him, but, you know, in the early 2000s, like, Corey Dillon was notorious being, like, a difficult guy with the media. Like, I don't see that in this locker room now. Like, I don't see, like, a guy who you would say just...
You don't see a guy
who's an incredibly difficult person to deal with.
You don't see a guy that would rip his jersey off at the end of the game and throw it into the stands?
Throw it in the stands? I don't know.
So,
I thought, and I hope, you know, it's just something behind the scenes, and Kelsey's there more of a day than I am, but I think that I don't want to speak for her, but it seems like because of the haters, you know, the folks around the organization and being in there, that's what I picked up.
Well, Kelsey, I hope you rest up a little bit now that the season's over. You know, you metaphorically have cleaned out your locker for this season for the Bengals, even though
maybe
I know
I'll actually take my Christmas decorations down now.
Maybe you can go to Orange Theory and not have to leave right away. Jason, unfortunately, you cover all sports, so no rest for the wicked. You got to keep at it, my friend. But no, this was a fun conversation. I really appreciate the insight you've shared with our listeners. And I, you know, appreciate all the work both of you do day in and day out. You are the unsung heroes. People just, you know, they take for granted that they're going to fire up the app and be able to read the latest on the Bengals, all the ins and outs and the analysis and everything like that. But I'm here to tell everybody it's hard work, even though the two of you would never say so. So I appreciate that.
Thanks so much for having me on. I love coming on and talk with you guys. It's always a blast.
I agree. Thanks, Kelsey.
Yeah, of course.
It's always so much fun to share how we do our jobs with our listeners and our readers because, you know, I have these conversations with them. I did think it was interesting that they got to vote on, you know, their favorite, the most media accessible player. I'm going to introduce that to City Hall next week and kind of put that on the table that we should do other than AFCAP himself, who's very accessible, like, and have who's the most accessible. We could do that maybe next year. I love it.
And have the the members of the press that cover City Hall vote on the most media accessible, media friendly city council person?
Totally.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
So I think we should let's have a theme this week, like one theme that's not just Cincinnati, and like let's keep talking about the Bengals. Since I was so sick, I did nothing this week.
I know. It sounds like you had to watch the game from your couch surrounded by cold medicine and Kleenex.
That is exactly what it looked like.
Oh, no.
Till my son ripped off his jersey and balled it up and threw it. So there was a reference. Somebody said that in the podcast as like a passing thing. That is exactly what happened. I was like, everyone has a real personality and a sports personality.
That's true. That is true. So just to put a bow on this wonderful Bengals season, and it was a wonderful Bengals season. I mean, we're very disappointed, obviously. The game was a heartbreaker on so many levels. But back-to-back appearances in the AFC Championship is very significant, as we talked about with Kelsey and Jason. You know, the reigning Super Bowl champs didn't even make the playoffs this year. So for the Bengals to have two back-to-back appearances in the AFC Championship, winning one of them, huge step forward for this team. When we talk about Cincinnati moments, let's talk about moments of this season. I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, what was your favorite moment of this Bengals season?
You know, I keep going back, and it's one I didn't expect. Like, I'm not one, I like to go to bed, of course, I like to go to the games and everything. And as much as I like to get dressed up and everything, I'm not like, oh, the themes. But the whiteout, you know, there was a lot of hype leading to that whiteout game. And I ended up going to that at the very last second. Of course, I had clothes that matched the theme and everything. And I have never seen that stadium like that. Not in the playoff game at the end of this year. There was an energy and the amount of people. There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, those numbers they say that like the stadium's full or whatever, that's the most people that's ever been in that stadium. I could just tell. You couldn't move in the stadium. That's how many people went. And it was just really incredible to be all together in a moment like that.
I think you're right. And that kind of mirrors a little bit my favorite moment of this season. And it was at the third game against the Ravens. It was the first game after the Bills game where DeMar Hamlin collapsed. And so the electricity was slightly subdued, I think, you know, after coming off a horrible experience like that. But the you know, the Bengals obviously won, and they had to, you know, put up this just tremendous defensive effort. You know, the Ravens had time to get into field goal range or to score, and the Bengals defense just like stepped up in a big way, preserved the victory. And Lauren, my wife, had actually brought a celebration cigar into the game with her as a surprise for me. And she was, because we had talked about, you know, because Joe Burrow famously smoking cigars after, you know, in the locker room after big wins. We had joked about, yeah, we should bring, you know, our friends and stuff, we should bring cigars in and light them up in the stadium. And I'm probably going to get in big trouble for this. But so Bengals win, everybody's like celebrating, and Lauren pulls out this cigar and hands it to me. And I was like, should I light it up? And I thought, well, you only live once. And I looked kind of around, and in our section of the stadium, there were like probably six or seven other guys that had pulled out cigars at the exact same time. And we're all sort of like looking at each other, like, are we really going to do this? And this really big dude, he just like, he didn't even have a cigar cutter. He just like bit the end off his cigar and lit it up. And the rest of us followed and did that. And we're kind of giving each other that nod, like, yeah, you know, like, I see you, my brother. We all brought our cigars, and now we're lighting them up in the stadium as we're walking out. And I said to Lauren, I said, what's the worst that can happen? They're going to kick me out of the stadium, and we got to leave now anyway. And so there was this probably like, by the time we started walking up the stairs, there's probably like a dozen of us with cigars lit and other guys, you know, people high-fiving us and everything like that. It was just this sort of like, these are, you know, strangers. I didn't know them, but there was sort of like this, you know, bonding together with a victory cigar in honor of the Bengals, in honor of that Joe Burrow tradition. And yes, there were a few people who were like rolling their eyes in disgust and like fanning the smoke away from their faces. So I apologize to them. I know cigars are nasty if you're not actually the one smoking it. But it was kind of this moment of like, you know, this is what it's about. This is what it's about to come together and share a big moment like that as Bengals fans. And I'll never forget it. It was just, that was my favorite moment of the season, just because it was so participatory in nature. I wasn't at home watching it on TV. I was standing in Paycor Stadium with a lit cigar, hoping now that I don't get some kind of citation because some public health person is listening to this podcast and they know where I work. So, and there's even photographic evidence. So I really don't think I can like
try. And to I'll delete that about. Right now. I believe I have some of it. I'm just going to delete that.
No, that's okay. I think it was all good, but that was my favorite moment. And I think we all had, you know, if you're a Bengals fan, there were times in the season where, you know, this was, despite the outcome Sunday night, this was another great Bengals season. And I hope we have more.
I think we're going to.
Well, shall we stick a fork in this podcast?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Bye.